supported by donations of cars, trucks, and vans. Donation information at newgateschool.org.
It is 6 minutes now past 11 o'clock. And good morning. Welcome to Midday on Minnesota Public Radio. I'm Gary Eichten. Glad you could join us. At last report, it was 830 and counting, or recounting. The recount continues in Florida, trying to determine who will be the next president of the United States. The director of Florida's Elections Division reiterated this morning that the recount should be completed late this afternoon, but it actually may take more time to finish counting the absentee ballots in Florida. The voting process in Florida is being challenged in the courts by some Florida residents. And what's more, U.S. Attorney General Janet Reno said this morning that she will also be reviewing any complaints involving the election, and there have been many. Controversy everywhere you turn, and joining us this morning to help sort through some of the questions surrounding this story is former Minnesota Secretary of State Joan Groh. Joan Groh was Minnesota's top elections officer for 24 years, from 1974 to 1998. She's a former president of the National Association of Secretaries of State. She served as an official observer to elections in South Africa, Romania, El Salvador, and Azerbaijan. Joan Groh is our guest this hour, and we invite you to join our conversation. If you have a question or comment about what's going on in Florida, give us a call here, 651-227-6000, 651-227-6000. Outside the Twin Cities, the number would be 1-800-242-2828. Now, don't get discouraged if you get a busy signal. We already have a number of callers on the line, but wait a few minutes, and you'll be able to get through with your question. Joan Groh, thanks for coming in today. Thanks for coming out of retirement.
Well, thank you. It's been almost two years of retirement, so I feel like I'm a little bit away from the action, but it's fun to talk to you again.
Well, the star comes off the bench. This has got to be an elections official's worst nightmare.
I would think so. I was at a party last night, and everyone said to me, aren't you glad you're not the Secretary of State of Florida? And I said, yes, although the situation would not happen in Minnesota this way, because the Secretary of State in Minnesota has no authority to conduct statewide or congressional recounts. Secretary of State's office only has authority to conduct legislative recounts and judicial recounts.
So who would, if this were happening here in Minnesota, who would take care of this?
It would be a court order, and the judges would do it, which happens in congressional districts, so that someone would bring the order to the court, and the court would call for a recount. They would appoint the election personnel. There would be Democrats, Republicans, and then considered a neutral party in each county.
Mm-hmm. The spotlight obviously is on Florida.
Yes,
and
it is.
Every conceivable procedure in Florida election law is being on. People are going over with a fine-tooth comb, reports of all kinds of problems, irregularities, and so on. If you were to shine a spotlight on any other state like this, would you find the same things?
I think that's difficult to say. Let me preface my remarks by saying I am not familiar with Florida's election laws, and I'm not familiar with their procedures, obviously. But I think one thing that you have to keep in mind in any state or any country, that there is absolutely no system that is totally perfect. Something can go wrong with a computer in counting. Think to yourself how many times you've called the airlines or someplace else, and they'll say, oh, I'm sorry, the computer's down today. If you're counting or putting numbers down, you have to keep in mind that's being done by human beings who possibly could inadvertently make a mistake by transposing a number, or they're exhausted or do that. That's why when an election is this close, it's critically important that the recount be done, and it be done very thoroughly, very cautiously, so that everyone has some confidence that the voters' vote has counted.
Why should we believe that the recount would be more accurate than the original count?
I'm not sure how they're doing the recount in Florida. From what I can gather, it looked as if They were simply running the ballots through the computer again and recounting those numbers. Mm-hmm. They may or may not find some mistakes with that. When we did recounts, and I can only speak from my own experience in legislative races, we didn't do that process. I mean, we did that process, but in addition, we looked at every single ballot. Because the reality is, if you're looking at a paper ballot, someone might have made their mark outside the little box.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, some election judge might have been very strict and not counted it. We would have counted that in a recount. That would be counted as much as you can tell the intent of the voter. In an optical scan ballot, which is what most of Minnesota uses, someone might not have made their mark inside that little oval.
Mm-hmm.
They might have made it next to the oval. Well, in a recount, and you're looking at the ballot, you would see that, and you would count it, because that's the intent of the voter. Or they might have used not the pen that the election judge gave them, but their own, and it wouldn't have, you know, the machine would not have picked it up when it was counting. In punch cards, which I guess a lot of Florida is punch cards, we don't allow them in Minnesota anymore. If you start to punch something, and then you look and you see, uh-oh, I didn't want to vote for that candidate.
Mm-hmm.
So you go to punch another one, and you punch that one through. There's like a hanging chad, it's called, and it's a little piece of that punch thing that's hanging through. I don't know what the machine will do with that, but when you're looking at it in person, you can see what the voter intended. And so in my judgment, in my eyes, and I'm not making any judgments about how Florida is doing it, I would look at every single ballot in something that is this close, this critical. And believe me, every election is critical.
Well, this does raise another interesting question. They say that except apparently for these absentee ballots from people who live overseas, except for those, they should be done by 5 o'clock this afternoon. Now, in Minnesota here, back in 1962, for example, it took 4 months to conduct a recount for the governor's race, far fewer people. So how can they do it so quickly and yet do it accurately?
Well, it would be my guess that the reason they can be doing this recount in 2 days is because what they are doing is simply running the ballots through the machine and looking at the vote count tally total,
mm-hmm.
and then mathematically totaling up all the totals from all the counties. I would assume that they are not looking at each ballot individually. When we did legislative recounts, which were maybe 60,000 ballots, it would take 2 days to
mm-hmm.
count those. And so there's no way you can count a state in 2 days.
James Baker and Warren Christopher, former Secretaries of State, U.S. Secretaries of State,
yes.
have been dispatched to Florida as the official representatives of the Bush and Gore campaigns. Now, you served as an observer in these foreign countries. What are these gentlemen doing? They're not actually looking at ballots, are they?
I would assume they're not. I would assume that what they're doing is perhaps looking into any voting irregularities, and I think they probably have a team of lawyers and trying to find out if there was any kind of fraud on the part of election administrators or fraud on the part of the public, or they may be looking at whether or not people were disenfranchised illegally, or whether or not, you know, ballots were different. I'm not sure what they're doing. I mean, as an outside observer, you can watch what happens. They may be watching the recount. To be sure every ballot is put into the machine. But, I mean, you don't see that kind of ballot fraud, in my judgment. I think the states have pretty well cleaned up their act where necessary, and you don't generally see that kind of fraud. I think what you might see, though, and you won't see it unless you look at it ballot by ballot, are some of the issues that I talked about earlier.
Mm-hmm. One other question, and I'm going to get to some listener calls here, but apparently, much of the debate right now focuses on what might be termed confusing ballot layout issues. People who apparently thought they were voting for Al Gore but may have ended up voting for Pat Buchanan instead, and things like that. Now, is that fairly typical around the country, where people have get confused as to what they're actually doing when they go to vote?
I don't think that's typical. I think the confusion, as I understand it, in Florida for those citizens were those people who were using the punch card ballots.
Mm-hmm.
We don't allow them to be used in Minnesota anymore. We think they're confusing. I mean, I remember when we had them, and I personally didn't like punching that hole. And I remember when my name would be on the ballot, I was so nervous that I'd punch the wrong person, wouldn't even bother to vote for myself. So I understand that confusion. It depends on how the ballot is laid out. I saw the photo of the ballot in the New York Times this morning. I think it's confusing.
Mm-hmm.
I think you could easily make a mistake in that ballot. And as I understand it, it must be that there is not a statewide ballot format in Florida, whereas in Minnesota, there's one format for the ballot and everybody conforms to that ballot for the statewide candidates, so that there isn't any confusion county to county. I think in a case like that where people felt they were confused, you might see it going through individual ballots, for example, as I mentioned earlier, where someone started, say, to punch for Buchanan and then realized they needed to change it to Gore. In some cases, you know, we've seen ballots where people actually, you know, wrote on it, don't count this one, count this. You know, I mean, trying to make sure that their vote was counted, not realizing that the machine doesn't pick that up. So I assume in that case, if all they're doing is putting them through a machine, and I don't mean to put that down, that may be
right,
all their law requires, then I think they probably will have to go to court to look at those ballots individually.
Former Minnesota Secretary of State Joan Groh is with us. She's a former president of the National Association of Secretaries of State. She has served as an official observer in elections in several countries around the world, and she's come out of retirement today to lend her expertise to this ongoing discussion of what's happening in Florida. The stakes, of course, couldn't be higher, because whoever ends up winning those 25 electoral votes is going to be the next president of the United States. Right now, election officials in Florida are still saying they are confident they'll be done with the recount by about 5 o'clock our time this afternoon. What is unclear is what happens then. But meanwhile, we thought we would zero in on the recount procedures. Tom's on the line from Badness Heights with a question for Secretary Groh. Tom?
Hi.
Hi.
My question has to do with fuzzy math. It seems to me that if you count once and you come up with one number, you count twice and you come up with a different number, it, by deduction, you need to count a third time and keep counting until you come up with the same total several times. Question one. Question two is, shouldn't there be some mechanism to ensure the rights of every citizen that there's a validating machine on the site of the where you vote at the poll, that you put your ballot through and a machine says, yes, this is a good ballot, then you put it in your ballot box?
Ah.
Wouldn't that be a way? Because if I'm hearing that there's 19,000 votes thrown away in Florida, I would hate to feel it was one of my votes.
Right, that's just in one county, actually. Let
me try to respond to your questions. On the fuzzy math issue, in a recount, generally speaking, you will have representatives from both candidates or both political parties there. You will have lawyers there, and there is no final, and I'm only speaking Minnesota experience here, there's no final number given until all parties agree.
Mm-hmm.
For example, in a legislative recount, if they're looking at paper ballots, they all have to agree, oh, this ballot should go for Nancy, not Susie.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone has to agree to that. If they can't agree on who a ballot should be voted for, they may all agree it should be tossed out, not counted, because maybe it's a bit mess. But if they absolutely can't agree, then those ballots go to the state canvassing board. And the state canvassing board in Minnesota is composed of the Secretary of State, two Supreme Court, and two district court judges. And we did have instances when I was in office where literally, and usually the state canvassing board just okays figures. You know, you're just approving the totals of numbers. It's a mathematical exercise. We literally had times when we looked at individual ballots, and the five of us would make some decisions. So I think there probably they must have something similar in Florida where they have parties who are representing everyone. Look at it. On your second issue, you know, yes, it depends upon what kind of equipment you have in your voting place. In most of Minnesota, we vote on optical scan. In many of our precincts, in the one that I vote in, for example, I put my optical scan ballot into the machine and stand there. Those machines are programmed so that if I vote for two candidates for president, the machine won't accept it because I've overvoted, and it will kick my ballot back out, and the election judge will tell me, you must have made a mistake. Here's a new ballot. Do it over again. But you have to have that kind of equipment in each precinct. I think that certainly is the goal that we're moving towards in the state and I think in most states. But currently, that equipment isn't present in all places, and it is possible for people to vote to do something wrong on their ballot, and their ballot isn't counted.
Mm-hmm. Howard, your question, please.
Not really a question, just several quick comments. One, I was reading in the newspaper that prior to this election, that the Secretary of State in the state of Florida went to all the two-party Republican Democratic major parties and the smaller parties in the state of Florida with proposed forms for the ballots. There was a whole lot of negotiation back and forth, and all the parties, the Democrats, the Republicans, the Secretary of State, and the other parties all agreed on these different ballots. So I kind of find it hard, I kind of find it amusing now that all of a sudden everybody's saying, oh, but they're so confusing, nobody understands them. Well, the parties anyways, which, supposed to represent the people, or the people are part of the parties, they all agreed to the form, the present form of the ballots that they're now complaining about. My second issue is NAACP is sticking its nose down there into an election that, whether or not they certainly don't like the outcome, but they're not sticking their nose into up in St. Louis, Missouri, where the polls in black communities were kept open 3 hours longer than in other communities, and they're not sticking their nose up into Milwaukee, Wisconsin, where the Democratic Party passed out packs of cigarettes for homeless men to come vote for Al Gore. Okay. Now, the solution to this, really, it's very easy. It's found, of all places, Article 2, Section 1 of the Constitution, which talks about the election of the presidency, and Article 12, Section 1 of the Constitution, which talks about the election of the president and changes in electing of the president and the vice president when no presidential candidate receives electoral majority. We don't need lawsuits. What we just have to do is follow Article 2 and Article 12 of the Constitution.
Well, we're trying to figure out whether somebody got a majority of the electoral vote, I guess, in terms of the second part of that. But what about, there are two issues there, it seems to me. Number one, should it matter that, in fact, all the appropriate officials did sign off on these ballots and so on prior, in terms of trying to figure out how best to handle the complaints about, well, these were confusing ballots and so on. People did approve these things in advance.
If that's the case, I believe I read the same thing, that certain officials approve the ballot, then I think then the recourse is, and people do have recourse to go to court. I mean, that recourse is always there for people. And then it's up to the judge to determine whether or not they have a legitimate complaint or whether they don't. And so that's really how that's going to be resolved. And that's true, I think, around the country. Mm-hmm. If there is an election question, contest, if people don't like the answer or like what they heard or saw, they go to court. I mean, we've had that instances in Minnesota several times. Sometimes I would make a decision. Somebody didn't like that decision I made. Boy, we were in front of the Supreme Court immediately. The one thing that happens in Minnesota and hopefully in other states is that all election questions are decided very promptly so that it doesn't interfere with the process. But I really can't speak very specifically to the other instances that the gentleman was talking about.
Let me ask you this. Given how close the election is, both in terms of popular vote and electoral vote all around the country, if we're going to zero in so specifically on those 25 electoral votes in Florida to make sure that they're given to the proper candidate, should we not also make sure that all the other electoral votes were properly assigned to Bush or Gore? In other words, shouldn't we be having a recount pretty much in all the states to make sure everything was done up to snuff?
I think one of the reasons we're having a recount in Florida is not necessarily because it was, you know, the last state for us to figure out who got the most votes, as we watched election night, but because they have a state law that provides for an automatic recount, as I understand it, if it falls within a certain margin of closeness. And so the recount is done automatically. I believe, and I might be wrong on this, but I believe that even if their votes didn't matter, you know, I mean, if the election had been decided without Florida, I think the law would still have required a recount unless the losing candidate probably said, hey, don't bother to do it. So it's an administrative procedure that happens anyway. It sounds like Florida may be one of the few states that has that law on their books. We don't have it in Minnesota for statewide races. And so I'm assuming that if there are other states in the country that have an automatic recount law for statewide races, they would automatically be going into that administrative procedure to recount also.
Tony, your question?
Let's see. I assume the poll workers from the area down there are not all Republicans, since the supervisor in the precinct is Democrat, from what I've been told.
Right.
And you would tend to think the majority of poll workers would be Democrat, or at least a 50-50 Democrat-Republican split. So if the ballot was said to be confusing from the start, wouldn't the workers, Democrat or Republican, say something to voters to set any confusion straight, or put up a sign or something like that? And then also, doesn't the sample ballot they have there at the polls, which they are either given or at least they're there, say do not punch more than once per, you know, candidate, or it will be voided and disqualified, and go get a new ballot before you officially turn it in?
Okay.
Because I voted in Minneapolis, and I saw a gentleman next to me get a new ballot due to a mistake he made, and that was without any problem at all. They just gave it to him.
Okay.
Again, I don't know what Florida's law is. I'm assuming that the people who work in each polling place are balanced according to party, as they are supposed to be in Minnesota according to law. I also assume that party or candidate representatives can be present in the polling place on election day, as is the case in Minnesota. And yes, we did tell election judges when we did our training in Minnesota for election judge training, we would ask the county people to tell the election judges if there's something that, you know, remind voters about something or other. I think this year, the person who handed me my ballot reminded me that there were to look at both sides, because my ballot had candidates and races on both sides of the ballot. In a primary, for example, in Minnesota, where you can only vote for candidates of one party, but both or three parties' candidates are on the ballot, the judges are supposed to tell you, remember, you can only vote for candidates of one party. It will say that on your ballot also, and it probably said something like that on the ballots in Florida. The reality is that even telling people that, even publicizing that, even sending out sample ballots, even having it written on the ballot, we still saw in Minnesota people making mistakes on their ballots. They'd get in the voting booth, and they would forget, and in a primary particularly, you would see them voting for candidates of both parties, which meant that their ballot was thrown out if it was a paper ballot. If it was an optical scan ballot, they put it in the machine, it came back to them. So as much as you try to train election officials, as much as you try to get information out to voters, there are people who will still be confused and still make mistakes.
Former Minnesota Secretary of State Joan Groh is our guest this hour. She served as Minnesota Secretary of State from 1974 to 98. Former president of the National Association of Secretaries of State. She served as an official observer and to elections in many other countries. And she's joined us today to lend her expertise to the ongoing discussion about the vote count and recount underway in Florida. Of course, as we said earlier, the stakes couldn't be higher. Whoever ends up with those 25 electoral votes in Florida when the dust settles will be the next president of the United States. And election officials in Florida still say they think they'll be done with the recount about 5 o'clock our time this afternoon. That you would think might be the end of the story, but apparently it won't be. Anyway, if you have a question for Secretary Groh, give us a call here, 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828, and we'll get to more of your calls here in just a couple of minutes.
Programming on NPR is supported by Pioneer Investments, helping investors reach their financial goals since 1928. On the web at pioneerfunds.com.
Hello, I'm Bill Kling.
I'm Bill Wareham.
I'm Bill Catlett.
I'm Bill McLaughlin.
I'm Bill Buesenberg.
I work with reporters making sure we're bringing you the state's top political stories.
We bring some of the greatest musicians in the world into your home.
I cover business and economics.
I'm responsible for making sure you get the best public service, public radio news available anywhere.
If you recently received a bill from Minnesota Public Radio, please remember to send in your payment right away. Your bill helps our bills keep you informed of the news and music of the day. Thanks.
Programming support comes from the financial contributions of listeners like you. Become a member online at MinnesotaPublicRadio.org. News headlines now. Here's Stephen Jones. Stephen?
Thank you, Gary. Janet Reno says so far she has no reason to jump in and get involved in the battle over the Florida ballot count, but the Attorney General says she'll review any complaint that's brought to her. She says among the complaints she's received is one from the NAACP raising potential civil rights challenges to the way Florida balloting was conducted. James Baker says he hasn't seen any indications of election fraud in Florida. GOP presidential contender George W. Bush sent Baker to Tallahassee to monitor the recount. Baker says he hopes to meet with his Democratic counterpart Warren Christopher this afternoon to talk about the situation. An arbitrator has upheld the NBA's penalties against Joe Smith. The ruling that NBA Commissioner David Stern did not overstep his bounds when he voided Smith's contract virtually assures that the Timberwolves player will leave the team. Now a free agent, Smith has no financial incentive to stay in Minnesota since the Timberwolves can offer him only a one-year contract for $611,000. Other teams can offer Smith a much more lucrative contract. Shares of Best Buy plunged more than 30% after the retailer warned that third and fourth quarter earnings would be below expectations. Best Buy says a slower economy is forcing more discounting of its products and is expected to trim earnings for the fiscal third quarter ending November 25th to about 27 cents a share. Earnings for the fourth quarter ending March 3rd will be about 90 cents a share compared to the consensus estimate of $1.02. Best Buy shares were down $16.50 in mid-morning trading on the New York Stock Exchange. The forecast calling for clouds today, a few flurries, highs from the mid-20s to mid-30s. Overnight tonight, a chance of light snow in the northwest with temperatures from the mid-teens to the near 30-degree mark in southeastern Minnesota. In Rochester, 28 degrees this hour, 29 in Duluth, 30 in the Twin Cities. That's a news update from Minnesota Public Radio.
Thank you, Stephen. 26 minutes before noon, midday coming to you on Minnesota Public Radio. And our guest this hour, former Minnesota Secretary of State Joan Groh, who has come by today to lend her expertise to the ongoing discussion about the count and the recount underway in Florida. And again, let me give you the phone number here, although no point in calling right this instant because all of our lines are busy. 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. By the way, we do have an update on the continuing recount in Florida with about two-thirds of the counties now recounted. George W. Bush clinging to a lead over Al Gore. The current vote total said to be about 795 votes. Secretary Groh, we've been talking a lot about the ballot confusion issue, but then there are other things that have surfaced that are equally interesting. There was a story apparently in another county, not Palm Beach County where so much focus is, another county where they found a box with 400 votes sitting in it, apparently hadn't been counted the first time around. Now, again, is that pretty typical? If you were to go to any other state on a busy election night, would you likely find a bunch of votes that somebody had forgotten to turn in?
I just don't think so. that is not typical. I mean, I can only speak for Minnesota, and you just wouldn't find it here. Our state law requires that the ballots be brought into the county office, you know, as soon as possible. If they're counting them in the precinct, They bring them in after they've counted. If they're bringing them into the county to count, they bring them there. You know, many, many years ago, I remember we were asking one of the rural counties, boy, where are some votes, you know, from certain precincts? Well, they called up the head judge, and it turned out that these poor people are like 60, 70 miles away from the county office. There's a snowstorm. They worked till 2 or 3 in the morning, and they counted them, and he just, you know, folded up the results in a box and went home, stuck it under his bed, and went to bed with the intent to bring it in the morning. There was nothing strange that went on or nothing funny. So we said, you know, you can't expect people to drive 70 miles in a raging blizzard. So we now have some provisions where in rural parts, you know, of the state, the county can send a car out, or the highway patrol or the police, to pick up the ballots or something. But they're supposed to be returned that night. You don't want to risk, even if the box is resealed, you don't want to risk ballots sitting around at someone's home or in the trunk of someone's car and having them lost for a while. I just can't believe that that's happening anywhere around the country.
Another question for you. I would imagine that no matter how this recount turns out, let's say at 5 o'clock this afternoon, nothing has changed and the vote total remains, the spread remains what it is, 795 votes. There aren't enough of these absentee ballots uncounted to make a difference. I would imagine one of the presidential candidates is going to be under intense pressure to drop the matter, let's get on with it, and that's it. Now, that raises the question in my mind, who do these votes belong to? Do they belong to the candidate, or do they belong to the people who cast the votes?
Well, that's a wonderful question. And I think sometimes we have to sit back and remember that elections are not held for the benefit of candidates or political parties. Elections are really held for the benefit of the people in that area, people in this country, and so that it is every citizen's right to have their vote counted validly and accurately and privately. And I think election administrators have a responsibility to do that to the best of their ability. Now, sometimes your equipment isn't what it should be, or your area can't afford the very best equipment, and so all those factors have to be taken into account. But voters have a right, I believe, to expect that their vote is counted the way they wanted it to be counted if they at least followed the rules for the election.
But if they want to exercise that right, they have to go to court.
That's correct. Then the next step for them is to go to court. And many voters, and hopefully people do feel strongly about their ballot, want to go to court to be sure that that has occurred. And it may or may not have anything to do with the politics of it. Sometimes that gets confused in with the issue, and there's always an outcome, and someone always wins and someone always loses. But if you try to take that piece of it away, you really want to be sure that people's votes are counted accurately.
Pat Buchanan said this morning he's fairly confident that many of the votes, apparently about 22,000 votes statewide in Florida that were cast for him, were actually meant to be Al Gore's votes. Should that be given any more weight, his comment, than the average person on the street?
Well, you often think that candidates have some sense of where their support is and how many votes they got the last time around, and they probably have been doing some polling and might know, so that if you're a candidate and you get a lot more votes than you'd expected in a certain area, you either go back to your pollster and say, boy, you weren't very good, or you think something might be wrong. Again, it's going to be up to the courts to make that decision.
Nora, your question, please.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call. Yesterday on Talk of the Nation was a caller that brings up something that I'm very concerned about. She was a voter in West Palm Beach County. She accidentally punched Buchanan and ended up having two punched, and tried to bring it back and say she was a first-time voter.
Mm-hmm.
And she tried to bring it back and say, this is a mistake. I would like a new, different ballot because I made a mistake. And they said, no.
Mm-hmm.
You have to vote. She said she accidentally voted for Buchanan, apparently, because of the way it looks. And we've all heard about how it looks. We've seen how it looks. One guy said that his 11-year-old son saw it on TV and said, oh, that's easy. But that's for people that are used to taking tests all the time, that it might be easy.
Well, again,
I can't speak for Florida. I hope they have the same statutes that we do, but if that happened in Minnesota, you just take your ballot right back to the election judge and tell them you made a mistake, and they will give you a new ballot. But
you're not suggesting this kind of confusion and mistake and error doesn't occur in Minnesota, ever occur in Minnesota?
It may. I mean, you know, someone might do that. You might have a brand new judge and they don't know, they've forgotten that. We have to keep in mind that the people who are sitting in the precincts on election day, at least here in this state, are people who work an election once every year, perhaps, maybe a couple of times a year, and that election laws change. And that's why we have so much focus on training and training and training election administrators. But these are people who are giving of their time, and they are not necessarily professional election judges. We don't have that kind of a category. And so, yes, mistakes can be made. But in that case, excuse me, if that person, you know, that person might have, it could have happened in Minnesota where that person would just take the judge's word for it. We would hope not. We would hope that that person would say, no, I believe I can have a new ballot. That judge would ask the head judge in that precinct. The head judge should know the answer to that. The person should be able to pursue it. Most precincts have a telephone, a cell phone. They could call up the county city clerk, county auditor, and get a valid answer for it. So that if there's a dispute between a voter and an election judge over what proper procedure is, they can make a phone call to someone who would know the answer.
Now, you spent a long time not only as an elections judge, but as a politician.
I did.
Practical matter. Given all the controversy here, is this, and given the stakes, and we're talking about President of the United States, is this something that should be left to a district court judge someplace?
Not necessarily. I mean, some pieces of it will be. It all depends on how your state law is structured. I believe that a partisan office, and the Secretary of State's office in Florida is a partisan office, and I don't know how their local offices are run. I believe you can conduct a recount in a nonpartisan way. I mean, in an honest way. I mean, we conducted recounts all the time for small races in Minnesota. I don't think anyone ever questioned, you know, our judgment in that. Plus, you have representatives from both parties there, and it is actually, the procedures are fairly clear.
Well, I guess what I'm getting at is the idea that if to take this issue to court, which is, of course, every citizen's right to do so, but to take it to court and then say, well, gee, we were unhappy with the fact our ballot might have been one of those that was thrown out or improperly counted. And so now you're asking a judge to decide, potentially decide the election, the presidential election.
Well, what you're really asking a judge to decide, and depending on the circumstances, is whether or not there is enough cause to look more thoroughly and into more detail about what happened regarding a certain procedure. I think, at least from my perspective, what we're hearing are individual people's comments. We're hearing some anecdotal evidence. I don't know if anyone has done any kind of a real investigation. You know, we hear Pat Buchanan saying one thing, a voter saying something else, an election official saying something else. If the matter is that confusing, if they think there is enough evidence to look further, then you do take it to the court, and that's where they have the ability to hire the people to do it and to look at it thoroughly. And then they may dismiss it and say, sorry, you know, there is no reason for this matter to go any further, or they may say there is. But that's really a court decision.
Rob, your question, please.
Yes, I'm curious about with the number of discrepancies there, including the confusing forms, and I've heard a number of people call in to say, gee, the forms are confusing. That's your problem. It's a government-approved form. I presume these people have never tried to do their own taxes if they think a government form can't be confusing. But with all the things, like the last caller said, her relative had the ballot in hand and couldn't change it. And I heard that story today on the Today Show. They interviewed 30 or so people from Palm Beach County. Many well-educated, well-prepared people with good eyesight who said they're pretty sure they voted mistakenly for Buchanan. With that those many problems, 18 or so thousand ballots thrown out, missing boxes, the reports we're getting of state troopers stopping black drivers who were driving towards the polls and checking their driver's licenses. I heard a report yesterday that there were election officials, you know, handing the ballots to voters and telling them Jesus wanted them to vote for Bush. So with all this stuff we're getting out there, it seems to me that as a voter and admittedly a Gore supporter, I wouldn't want to accept a recount at 5 o'clock today. I would want to say that the election needs to be held again at least in certain counties, and certainly the people who registered and voted before would be the only ones that, you know, would be allowed to recast their votes. Is there some way we can urge that to happen? Is there someone we can contact in Florida, someone we can contact in Washington to say, look, I'm a voter, I'm a citizen, and I think you've just got to redo this. It's clear.
Well, if you feel strongly about it and you raise some very interesting examples that I actually hadn't heard, I suppose you could wire or contact the Justice Department. The Department of Voting Rights will look into irregularities, and they have in the past, and I assume they will continue to do in the future. I think, again, it doesn't matter which candidate you're supporting. Is that I think what people want to know is that the election was counted accurately. You know, let me just cross over to something else. One of the good things that can come out of a mess like this, if we want to consider this kind of a mess, is that you can learn a lot about what wasn't quite right in the election, or what was confusing, or the fact that maybe you should have had the same ballot format throughout the state. And so the process can be improved for next time around. I mean, that doesn't do any good this time, and it's probably not even the appropriate time to say anything about it now. But there is some good that can come out of that, where you know that there is that scrutiny and that changes can be made. But I would urge the caller and others who feel that way to contact the Justice Department, or to, contact, I suppose, I don't know if the Secretary of State's office would do any good in Florida, but I guess the Justice Department would be the place to call. Maybe another caller has an idea where they should call.
If somebody decided that it would be appropriate to have a second vote in a couple of these counties, would it also then be appropriate to have a second vote across, in this case, the entire state of Florida, or maybe the whole nation?
I just can't respond to that question. I certainly don't think that's going to happen. And I think it would depend upon what the findings were in that particular area by that particular court and what the court ruled in that case.
Wouldn't it be mind-boggling to have voters in one county elect the president of the United States?
It is mind-boggling when you think about it. But you know, Gary, it does point out that one vote does make a difference, and your vote does count. And when we look at these elections and we think, well, we just go in and vote and millions of other people are voting and it doesn't matter, it does matter. And so there probably are, you know, other areas that we could look at around the country where, you know, one or two votes in a particular place made the difference. If anything, it should drive home for people the fact that their vote does really count.
Kathy, your question, please.
Yes, Gary, I think we've opened a real can of worms here. For instance, when I voted, I slipped my ballot in the 13th Ward. I slipped my ballot into the machine. It registered that it did not take, but it did not spit out the ballot. And the monitor just came and pushed a button and said, you can leave now. So my question is, are we really free of any type of maybe irregularities even in Minnesota? Maybe that's a good question. Why was my ballot rejected but then wasn't spit out?
It's possible, and sometimes in the precincts, because of the number of people voting, that the machine just, you know, you might have put it in a little crooked, it didn't take it, and they have the ability to sort of override it. But it's my understanding that if you had voted incorrectly, for example, if you had voted for too many candidates for president or legislature, even pushing the button would not have allowed that ballot to go through. So I think you can feel fairly secure that your ballot was counted and was counted the way you wanted it to be counted. I must tell you that I think the one example we can look back to is 1962, the recount for governor in Minnesota, when we had almost all paper ballots. And those are the ballots with which, you know, you have the most problem because they're the most prone for error. A difference of 91 votes, and there was a recount done with under a court order with partisan people watching and counters who were neutral, and it did not change. They did not find any instances of fraud in Minnesota. And I think what happened with that is that it kind of affirmed for citizens of Minnesota the processes that were being used in the election. I think since that time we have only gone on to try to improve those processes and make sure that each new piece of equipment or each new provision or each change would secure people's right to vote, and that people should feel confident that their vote is secure in this state.
I was going to ask you, though, nationwide, you were saying that if nothing else, this should underscore the importance of everybody voting, that their vote actually counts. Isn't there also the possibility, though, that people will look at this, folks who don't follow the process that closely, and say, well, this whole thing is rigged anyway, and you have all these charges of illegitimacy flying around and people losing boxes of ballots and 19,000 votes being kicked out in one county alone and on and on and on, and they say, oh, why bother? It's all rigged.
Well, I suppose that could also be a reaction. We have had instances around the country of voter fraud, instances where election administrators have perpetuated voter fraud. They just haven't bothered to count. We have had instances in this country where states by law have made it incredibly difficult, if not impossible, for some people to register to be allowed to vote. And so we have all these things that have happened, but we have, I think, attempted to correct them. And I think it's kind of like the will of the people have to sort of rise up and say, what's going on in my area? What's going on in my state? I demand something different if you don't like the system. But Gary, you raise a good point, and I suppose some people would say, oh, throw the whole thing out. Then again, we hope that they would look at the majority of the country and say, you know, people are doing their best. The equipment is the best we have. It's the best system we have. Nothing is absolutely perfect. And democracy isn't perfect, and it isn't easy, but it's the best system we have.
Thanks so much for coming in today. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. It's been fun to be here.
Former Minnesota Secretary of State Joan Groh coming out of retirement today for our midday broadcast. Secretary Groh served Minnesota from 1974 to 98. Former president of the National Association of Secretaries of State, and she served as an observer to several elections around the world, South Africa, Romania, El Salvador, Azerbaijan. Joining us today to take part in the continuing conversation about that big story in Florida.
This week, a Prairie Home Companion heads down to Lexington, Kentucky, with the great bluegrass mandolin player, Mr. Sam Bush and his band, and the Del McCoury Band as well. Of course, the news from Lake Wobegon and much more coming up this week.
Listen for Prairie Home Companion Saturday afternoon at 5 on all NPR stations, and again Sunday at noon on Minnesota Public Radio, KNOW-FM 91.1 in the Twin Cities.
5 minutes now before 12.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday. It's the 9th of November, 2000. It was on this day in 1989 the Berlin Wall was opened, and citizens of East and West walked freely through the holes in the wall as others danced on top of it to celebrate the end of an era. It came at a time when East Germany was celebrating its 40th anniversary. There were pro-democracy demonstrations which led to the resignation of the East German head of state, Erich Honecker, who had supervised the construction of the wall back in 1961. He was replaced by Egon Krenz, who promised open political debate and a lessening of travel restrictions, and that inevitably led to the reunification of the two Germanies by the summer of 1990. It's the birthday of astronomer Carl Sagan, born in Brooklyn, 1934, who did much to popularize science through his television program, Cosmos. It's the birthday of poet Anne Sexton, born in Newton, Massachusetts, 1928, who made many suicide attempts in her life, the first on her 28th birthday. Her psychiatrist told her that she was highly intelligent and that she should write poetry, and she set out to do it. Her first collection came out in 1960, To Bedlam and Partway Back. Live or Die won a Pulitzer Prize, and The Awful Rowing Toward God came out a year after her suicide in 1974. And it's the birthday of the novelist and playwright Ivan Turgenev, born in Oryol, Russia, 1818, to an aristocratic family. He learned French and German and English, but he had to learn Russian from the family servants. He wrote the novel Fathers and Sons, 1862, in which he introduced the term nihilist. Turgenev was a master at describing the sort of Russian who no longer had a place in society, the lishny chelovyek, the not needed, or as Westerners translated into English as the superfluous man. Here's a poem by Anne Sexton on her birthday, entitled Courage. It is in the small things we see it, the child's first step, as awesome as an earthquake, the first time you rode a bike wallowing up the sidewalk, the first spanking when your heart went on a journey all alone, when they called you crybaby or poor or fatty or crazy and made you into an alien, you drank their acid and concealed it. Later, if you faced the death of bombs and bullets, you did not do it with a banner. You did it with only a hat to cover your heart. You did not fondle the weakness inside you, though it was there. Your courage was a small coal that you kept swallowing. If your buddy saved you and died himself in so doing, then his courage was not courage. It was love, love as simple as shaving soap. Later, if you have endured a great despair, then you did it alone, getting a transfusion from the fire, picking the scabs off your heart, then wringing it out like a sock. Next, my kinsman, you powdered your sorrow, you gave it a back rub, and then you covered it with a blanket, and after it had slept a while, it woke to the wings of the roses and was transformed. Later, when you face old age and its natural conclusion, your courage will still be shown in the little ways. Each spring will be a sword you'll sharpen. Those you love will live in a fever of love, and you'll bargain with the calendar, and at the last moment, when death opens the back door, you'll put on your carpet slippers and stride out. A poem by Anne Sexton, Courage, from The Awful Rowing Toward God, published by Houghton Mifflin, used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, brought to you by the people at 21NorthMain.com, where book lovers find 13 million gently read classics, bestsellers, and rare masterpieces on the web at 21NorthMain.com. Production assistance from Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Regional broadcasts of the Writer's Almanac are supported by Marquette Banks, your community bank, offering a broad range